Welcome to Testing Experts with Opinions, an inspired testing podcast aimed at creating conversations about trends, tools, and technology in the software testing space.
Welcome, everyone, to our fourth episode in this series of podcasts that we started recording. I think it's only right for me to set the scene for what we're going to be talking about today, and it's something which is always topical. And it's around test maturity and why test maturity is important within organizations. I think it's important to also understand what we mean by test maturity. And once that foundation is set, then it's easier to have a conversation around what the potential benefits are, the different models of test maturity, how test maturity is typically measured, and why we've actually taken the time to talk about it today. So we have our usual panel here today. All of you well?
Yes, thanks, Leon.
Yes, I'm well, thank you. Good. Yourself?
Good.
Very well, thank you. And then we also have a new starter or a new joiner to our podcast, which we really want to take the time to welcome. And we decided that it's just wrong for us to only have South Africans on here, so we've managed to find ourselves someone in the UK that can join us, and that person is Mr. Stephen Platten.
Hi.
Steve, do you just want to introduce yourself briefly?
Yeah, sure. I'm Stephen Platten. I've recently joined the team as one of the principal consultants, UK-based, if you can pick up the slightly Yorkshire twang in my accent. I'm looking forward to talking to everybody about this topic today and getting to know everyone.
To our one or two South African listeners that we do have, we're going to have to get a translator for you.
Yeah, I think the transcript will cover that off, I think.
Exactly. All right, Steve, so do you want to set the scene in terms of when we talk about test maturity, what do we actually mean by that? What is test maturity?
Yeah, okay. So test maturity, which is something I've done with a number of companies and clients and throughout my career, is effectively a framework or a set of frameworks for you to understand where your organization is in terms of its testing, right? So it's a scaling way of kind of thinking about it. Is our testing, we understand it to some degree, it's brand new, we don't really do it, all the way up to we are like a world leader in testing, recognized most other companies as being best practice in what we do, and we're constantly optimizing our approach. So it's a way of measuring yourself against a set of frameworks to find out where you are on that scale. So from like something like initial, so you kind of testing is ad hoc and very pragmatic and it's very disjointed, to something that is a large centralized QA function that has lots of processes and tools and frameworks and methods of practice that everyone follows and adheres to, and then anywhere in between that big kind of big sliding scale. So that's like kind of test maturity in a nutshell, is kind of situational awareness for your company to understand where you are on that testing journey.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, and I'll just briefly ask you, but once you've answered that, the rest can give their opinions as well. But if we talk about it, why is it important? And I guess what are the advantages of being mature in your testing?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. And as Steve has said, it's good for your organization to know where you are on a maturity scale. And that's one thing. And just as we do with CMMI for big organizations, we do it from a testing perspective. Why is it important? And a lot of times we do these assessments. People tell us, okay, I'm on a two, on a three, but so what, right? So what we try and achieve through these maturity and understanding an organization's test maturity is to say, are we doing the right things from a test organization perspective? And are we doing them in the most effective and efficient way? Because just as the world has moved on and the software development life cycle has gotten shorter and shorter, as a test organization, you want to contribute to those efforts and you want to fit into those models. And it's only by understanding what you are doing and is what you are doing a mature thing, i.e. are we doing it effectively and efficiently, then we see how we contribute to those efforts and how we fit into a more agile environment. So it's not only about the rating, but it's making sure that when we do something as a test, and I often refer to that as purposefully testing, right? So if you're doing something as a tester, that task that you are doing, what is the purpose of that? And does that add value to the organization and the software development lifecycle? And it's through these assessments that we look at these items and aspects of testing to see that and highlight the areas and elements where you can actually do things more effectively and more efficiently.
Yeah, if I just pick up on that point that Jan made there, is you can be really guilty of spending a lot of time and effort in an organization on testing a specific aspect or a specific methodology or a tool, whatever that is, and then not realize that that's not really adding a lot of value to what you're doing. So you could spend an enormous amount of time, let's say, in usability testing when you have actually a very small amount of customers, and that's not really something they're really focused on. The functional aspects of the software are the most important things, and you're spending your time and efforts in the wrong place. So the test maturity is, if you do something like an assessment, is also a way of going, okay, we're spending a lot of time here on this thing over here, but it's not something the business even cares about, or it's something that's really valuable for us. So it allows to highlight that as a problem.
Yep. So Steve, just to write on what you've just said there, I think one of the reasons why I see companies requesting for test maturity assessments is simply because quite often, maybe they may be trying to engage consultants to come and do a certain piece of work. But the reality is you're hiring somebody to do something, but you don't know the starting point. You don't know where you are exactly as an organization. So yeah, I think in most cases, people might be busy, but busy doing what? So at some points, organizations may need to draw a line to say, okay, we are at this point. Let's assess exactly where are we? What tools are we using? It can be an assessment on tools or it can be on processes. In other cases, it might also touch even the people. So for me, companies that are doing health assessments or assessments in general are possibly in the right direction, because you cannot continue spinning money in projects. Say you want to implement test automation, you have to assess exactly where are you in terms of maturity, be it of your test cases, the structure itself within the organization.
Okay, so now that we understand what test maturity is and we've kind of alluded to some of the advantages and why it's important to do, what are some of the different models that can be applied to understand your test maturity? So obviously TMMI and TPI are two of the more prominent ones. Does anyone just want to have a stab at, I guess, how those models are applied to your testing practices and maybe what the benefits are of using something established like TMMI versus maybe a custom model or maybe something that you've come up yourself?
If you look at the TMMI one, so they tend to structure things in levels. So you have level one, which would be something like initial, all the way to level five, which I believe is optimized off the top of my head, with different frameworks to get you through those kind of levels. They recently updated it to be more agile scoped focus because the original model was very waterfall kind of catered to. And the advantage of, I think, if we go to look at the advantages of something like that, the distinct levels have like distinct criteria and KPIs and metrics for you to measure yourself again to understand where you are on that journey. So it does you a very clear, concise map to get to that point. It also has a corresponding set of actions and processes to improve and change and create to get you to that next level. And there's also a benefits analysis with each level as well. So level five might not be the right decision for your business. And part of the TMI's advantage in those leveling system is like, well, maybe we're level two right now and three would be perfectly satisfactory for us. We don't see the spending the extra value and costs on level four attainment would actually give us that extra return of investment, that ROI. So I do like that kind of framework around it. It's very, very useful. For the kind of other frameworks, they're a bit more agnostic to delivery models. So they cater and fit within kind of like a DevOps delivery or if you're using Safe or something like that. They're a bit more lifecycle agnostic. But again, all around the same principles of you create a level of maturity or a level of confidence in your testing at that specific stage, and you build up and down from that framework depending on what you want out of it. So it's very ROI driven, which I like the kind of formal frameworks for that side of it. It's very easy for a business to rationalize, I'm going to spend some money here because the ROI is going to be this, which will lead me to this. And that clear leveling is a way of really illustrating that point. But I guess to touch on like some of the negatives of some of those adoptions of them, some of those models that I've seen within customers and clients and people that I've worked with, would probably around how difficult it is to attain those levels. So there's actually quite an intensive amount of work to push the levels up, depending on where you are. To go from level 1 to level 5 is not something that will happen overnight. That's going to take a significant amount of time, years, more than likely. And that ROI is sometimes very difficult to justify back into the business. Why are we spending so much money on achieving this formal level when the ROI is actually quite small in comparison to the amount of work that we've done? And I would also say that some of the frameworks, probably TMI, I would say the framework's quite heavy duty. It's not something, like say a small tech startup with 100 people can just pick up and run with. It's quite laborious. There's quite a lot of documentation to follow and assessments to complete. It's quite heavy going as well. So again, that's probably not an approach that you want to do if you're a smaller company or a startup business where speed to market is something that you care about.
Yeah, I just to add on what Steve has said around DMMI and TPI. So those models are good. And I think there are use cases where it is important for organization to formally test its test maturity against those models, right? There are also regulatory requirements, sometimes and auditing requirements to say that we as an organization needs to be on a certain level. It helps frame testing in a business speak as well sometimes. So it's easier, as Steve said, easier to go to senior stakeholders and explain the concept of maturity and moving up level. So from a formalized perspective, it is good. I agree. The other side of the scale and what we've done before as well is to have a more informal maturity check. That is, and I get that as maybe you can argue that's more subjective, right? Where these standard frameworks are not. But there's also a need for small organizations, even bigger ones, to say, am I doing the right thing? Going back to the original conversation, am I doing the right thing? And what can I do to be more effective and efficient now, not worrying about formal levels? And what I've seen in the market, there's a big appetite for that. Organizations started a QA department, a QA competency, and they've done best effort up to now. And at some stage, they want experts to come in and see, are we doing the right things in the right way? Are we mature? It's not necessarily official standardized maturity level from 1 to 5, but it is a maturity check to see if from your experience in the testing realm and someone who's doing a lot of R&D in the testing world, come and look at our testing process and see if we are doing it in the right way and are we adding the most value and are we then mature in what we do and not necessarily only against formal labels, but also on that label. And that helps organizations implement low-hanging fruit to say, let's do a couple of things now that shows business benefit and shows SDLC value, and then we can build from there. So that's the other part of not the non-formal frameworks that I've seen.
I wanted to come in on the angle of maybe how maybe rigid some of these frameworks can be. I'm not shooting down TMMI. I've used it. I love it. It's structured. And when you follow it guidelines, it helps you really to come up with a very fair and objective outcome of any assessment. So I initially tried just using the one which was following more like the waterfall model. Then I realized like it wasn't really gelling with the agile way of things which the company was doing. And then I adopted their agile version. So it was very good. I liked it. Everything's very objective. Even the scoring points to say, if you've got a strategy, at what level is it? And then you can score all the way. And also depending on whether you're trying to target a level 1 or a level 5, like what Steve said earlier. But what I just like though about these frameworks is it's very structured. But at the same time, it can also be very heavy. Yeah, just for you to go through the TMMI assessment for an organization, it's demanding. And the number of people whom you have to meet, you have to take interviews. So at times, that flexibility also might not really be there. So maybe, I don't know if anybody has used any other hybrid kind of a health check or health assessment. Those ones might cover all those issues which I'm talking about, like the rigidity of some of these frameworks.
Okay, so Matt, I haven't worked with or I don't have any knowledge of hybrid assessments, but then I actually wanted to talk about new testing organizations because I think everybody is talking about existing testing organizations. So I wanted to ask, what about new testing teams or organizations, would it be advisable to set up a new organization by implementing a level 5 TMMI model, for example, meaning to frame testing at a higher level from the beginning.
So maybe just to quickly answer you, Mamatla. So a level 5 is quite demanding. It is a whole lot of things. For example, for you to have a level 5, you should have a policy document, strategy document. Everything should be to the T. So it's too demanding for you to start at a level 5. You'd rather start at 0 to say you don't have anything, you are starting, which is the right base, actually. Then you work your way upwards. But if you start at a level 5, it is too demanding and you may not necessarily meet the requirements.
But then, Matthew, if I am going to an organization, I can actually, you actually start with a test strategy before you can implement anything. So if I go, I'm going to start, let's say, for example, at TCOE, isn't it better to ensure that I already have the policies in place, the strategy in place while setting up the new organization? Why should I start from 0 if I can go straight to 5 from the beginning?
Yes, if I can maybe help answer that point. I think you're right. It's not, obviously, it'd be great. It's a good idea to set out a test policy and a test strategy for the organization. Let's say with a new company, right? We've got a new QA function. You want to start with those basic grassroots. And I think if you went and you looked at the level 5 and all the things that you would need to do to achieve that, I don't think that's a bad thing to just like roadmap out what we want to do, starting from day 1 to day 100, right? We're going to map it out against those level 5. But I think Matt's point was maybe more on you won't get that level 5 assessment done in the first 6 months, year of your QA function existing. There's got to be an element of, I'll start with a bare minimum of best practice, like a strategy, policies, and templates, and some processes. I need to bed that into the organization over 3 to 6 months, 9 months, let them use it, adapt it, learn it, understand it, see if they're actually following it first before we kind of progress anything else. So I think a level 5 from scratch is more about the amount of time your organization needs to do to kind of adapt and live within that framework before you get that level 5 assessment. I think as a long-term roadmap, it definitely works, but I think it would be quite difficult to spin up a QA function from scratch and go, okay, everyone's now going to be at level 5, because you've got to be maturing. You've got to be doing the do, is kind of how I would phrase that. You've got to be living that framework for 6 months, a year, to, or even longer, depending on how big you are.
Yeah, I agree with Stephen. I think it's a luxury to build out a competency up to level 5 before you can start using it. So I would also take that agile approach, minimum viable product, and then build it out from there. But it's a good point, Mamata. You made me think there for a second. It is good to have that roadmap from the start. Then at least you've got a plan. You're not sort of falling over your own feet. You know exactly where you're going with it, but at least start small and build out from there. Yeah, and I wanted to mention about the hybrid model. I'm not sure if you wanted to mention something to Mamata's comment first.
Yeah, thanks, Stefan. I'll just comment and I'll pass back to you around that. And I think we've said it, but we are always trying to articulate the value of testing, right? So in a new organization, if you have a testing department and you're going to start with trying to implement all the level 5 things, you're going to end up 3 months down the line not having done testing and not having added anything to the software development lifecycle. So I think it's going to be more difficult than to say, okay, you've spent 3 months, you're on a level 5 from a documentation and process level with 2 releases or 5 releases into production, and there was no testing done. So it is, as Stefan and Steve have said, I think it's slowly but surely maturing and implementing these things and deciding then at which level, because that's the other thing, is if you get to level 3, for example, and you say, well, my test organization is good enough, then that's good enough for you, right? Rather than trying to get to a 5, getting there and realizing, oh, it was actually okay to be at level 3 or level 4. Thanks, Stefan.
Yeah,
I think you're going to have to wait, Stefan. I think there's still more to say on this. Hold your thought.
Yeah, sorry, I was just going to just add to Aaron's point, and maybe from to give a non-testing analogy or an example of that, where I think it kind of similar, people non-testers on the podcast understand would be, I go to the gym a lot, so I'm weight training, powerlifting, I do a lot of that. Test maturity is like people going, I've never been to the gym before, what supplements do I need to take, what routine do I need to follow, what exercise is the most optimal? I was like, you're not there yet, you just need to go to the gym. You just need to do the do, right? You need to go with some basic principles, just do the doing for a little bit of time, and then slowly but surely start to add things in to improve yourself. You don't need to look at optimizing what supplements are best for you when you don't go to the gym four times a week. Like, get the basics nailed down first, start to improve from that solid foundation, and then build yourself up. And I think that's another example of why you would do that.
Yep, exactly. Especially if you think you might need, let's say, stronger biceps, but what you need is calves, then you know, you soon find out that you need the biceps. So you might run the risk of building out or strengthening your calves, but you never needed it. That's you're building something that's maybe going to be used once in 6 months, you know. So if you do it in an agile way, you'll soon see what the burning issues are and focus on those first. I think maybe there's a good gap just to go over to the hybrid model. I mean, I've had experience using the TPI Next model, Stephen, which you referred to some other models, and that one is also quite heavy. Actually, we recently just finished up a maturity assessment with a company, and you know, that one was, we literally just had 2 days, not even 2 days, a few hours in 2 days at the client site. And in cases like that, we don't always have the luxury to do a proper maturity assessment that could take hours, going through a lot of questions with many people. You know, sometimes just asking the right leading questions can almost give you that 75% issues already and help you to flesh out on that. I think there's a place for those heavy assessments, but I think if you just listen carefully and ask the right questions and actually let it be a more open-ended flow and say, you know, where do you fit in the organization? What's your day-to-day process? And what are your burning issues? You know, if you just ask a few leading questions, it's almost like they're going to spill the beans very quickly. And within a short period of time, you will very easily see the burning bridges and help to give them. It might not be all the right things to all the right recommendations and touching on all the points, but it will be the core ones. And that's always a good start. So anyway, just my thoughts on a hybrid model, or even just going purely more light touch, like a fluid conversation kind of assessment.
I agree with that. And just to go back to the hybrid thing. So I think the benefit we have there, Stefan, is that we come with a wealth of testing experience and a lot of years in the testing field. And although it sounds like it's very informal, you still have these models at the back of your head, right? So it's not to say that, I think from a TMI perspective, it's easier for someone to go in because it's rigid and you ask the questions and you get the answers and there's a formal rating thing. The way, like I said, the hybrid way we approach it sometimes around the health check or the QA maturity informal check of it is we are going there with our testing experience, but having done research on these models and bringing that into the conversation. So it's not that it's a completely unstructured way. It's just not as rigid. And you can react to what the person is saying and ask the right questions based on that. So all I want to say is you have to be careful to say, all right, there is a very formal structure in a TPI or TMMI structure. And then there's the way that we spoke about now, which is more informal, but that informal thing is still based on experience and research that we bring into the organization just to know what to look out for.
Yeah, I definitely agree. It's not that an informal approach isn't based upon some kind of rationale and reasoning and processing. You definitely got those things in the back of your head. But I quite like to use within teams, squads and clients, I quite like to use quite open questions to understand where I think the problems are. So I'll ask things like, if you could wave a magic wand and you had infinite budget, infinite time, what would the testing organization look like? Oh, we'd have stable environments. Okay, so environments are something you're worried about. We'd have a test data tool that produces all our data for us. We'd have independent QA. Okay, so they're just listing off the things that they want. And then you can map that back to a formal model and go, okay, these are the things that they're prioritizing. And that open question allow them to kind of air their laundry of like, here's the things that we're really struggling with. Here's the things that are problems for us. Defect management is always something that's really ambiguous in the company. We don't know how to do that well. Okay, that's somewhere we need to focus for you as well. So you can use those open questions to allow the conversation to naturally lead to the answers that they need from the client.
So if we're saying that TMMI is, or TPI for that matter, is maybe not perfect for that company just starting off, I guess at what point do you feel that a company could actually reap the rewards of following a structured approach such as TPI or TMMI? So is there a I guess, is there a tipping point in terms of company size or team size where this actually starts making sense?
Yeah. What I want to say on that is that we have to be mindful of not confusing a structured approach with a structured way of measuring your test maturity, right? So do we need a structured approach from day one? Absolutely. That's why you get senior test leadership into an organization to set up your test competency or your quality engineering competency. And there are nice models. If you look at TMAP, for example, that tells you what is important in setting up a test competency and what are the phases through it and how do you monitor your test organization. So I think to answer your question, we should always start with a structured approach to testing and making sure that we get the right people in place that can implement a structured testing organization. But the second part of your question, when should we start measuring that? I think after about 6 to 12 months to say, all right, I've implemented a test organization based on my experience as a test leader. I've built it on my experience, and I've also built it on, for example, TMAP. So I know that at least it's based and structure-based. The foundation is based on the right things. But now 6, 8, 12 months down the line, let's do a health check to see if we are still on the right track and if what I'm implemented is actually mature enough to take us forward and to support the business strategy.
Yes, and I think the only thing I would add to that is like, well, Leon, your question of it, is there a tipping point? I think a tipping point in my head would be scale and size of the company. So you could probably get away with less rigor when your test team is two or three testers in a smaller organization. When you're getting into the thousands of employees and you're cutting millions of lines of code a week, that you've got to look at, then you need to start to do some sort of assessment of where you are. You're going to start to introduce lots of bad practices potentially, and that scaling problem is only going to hide those problems from you. Doing an assessment, either formal or informally, is kind of peeking in the cupboards and going, oh, look, we've been doing this for years and this is actually a pretty, really bad way of doing it. And I think a tipping point in my head is when a company gets to a certain size or scale or even amount of turnover and revenue, then an informal or more formal assessment is probably a good thing to start to look at.
And then I want to go back to a point that Jan made, I think, right at the start of the conversation, which was if you're not following a structured model and you're doing some sort of a custom model or doing something based on your experience, it becomes subjective very quickly. And especially for large organizations, they may not like that. They may not like the fact that you've given me a report or you've shown me where my maturity lies, but actually, what are you basing that on? You're basing that on your frame of reference. In my mind, any custom model or any assessment needs to have the principles of some of those more structured models within them. Is that a fair comment?
Yeah, I would say you'd probably want to build it out from some industry best practice or wider frameworks. But what I would say, yes, it is subjective. It is our opinion of where you are. That doesn't mean that that's not an evidence-based assessment. That doesn't mean it's not a rationale-based assessment. It is our subjective assessment, but we've measured you against these things that we've judged you on. So if again, I'll use defect management. When we looked at you, we think defect management is a problem for you. And we've made that assessment of the fact that there's no centralized framework within QA on how defects are raised and managed. It's ad hoc and it's different depending on where you are in the business. That is not a good way to do things. That needs to be centralized. And here is our evidence of why that would improve things. That is subjective, but we are still backing it up with some concrete evidence that's contextualized as well.
In my opinion, it's better to use or to benchmark with some renowned or tried and tested frameworks. Say we are building your own framework. Simply because, okay, looking at example of TMMI, you know, it guides you to say if this and that is available, this is how you score or you rate that particular activity. So if it's not structured to that extent, you can easily create chaos in the organization in the sense that, say, the test manager or the head of QA perceives themselves as if they are on level 5, yet when you do your assessment, which may be subjective or subject to interpretation, you rate that organization is on stage two or level two. So that alone, it will then start bringing so many questions, your model being challenged. So the advantage of using or benchmarking with the renowned frameworks is you get your objective answers to why you are rating in any manner. Being subjective will lead it to subject to any interpretation and being challenged. So Leon, to answer you, my perspective, I totally agree. We should benchmark our hybrid models with the world-renowned and tried frameworks like TMMI or TPI.
So then the other point is we know testing doesn't operate in isolation. We don't have our own small world within an organization, maybe like in the old days. These days, most organizations are following Agile, and you've got a lot of collaboration with development teams and cross-functional teams. So how do we, I guess, incorporate and involve the development aspect, the software engineering aspect and the software engineering side into these assessments and into these models? Because yes, it's called a test maturity assessment, but we know that testing isn't just within the testing team. It actually spans much wider than that.
Okay. Leon, if you refer to the TMMI model, for example, the level 3 of the model actually says testing should be incorporated in the development life cycle. So if you still have a testing organization that is running in isolation, so it means you are on maybe like level 1 or level 2. So for organizations that are already integrated, we can still measure or we can still assess them, but at level 3 of the TMMI model.
Yeah, I think it's a really good point, Leon. QA can go off and do its own thing and like become a leading department in QA, recognized by others. But if your development and business practices are still behind or immature or problematic, there's only so much your improvements will go, what's the return on investment start to go down? I think the way to kind of tackle that and what I've seen work with clients is that for QA to be very transparent that they're doing this. So reaching out to other parts of the business, so, hey guys, we're going through this maturity process to try and improve our ways of working, and this is how we're doing it, and this is the outcomes that we've found. What are you guys doing in your areas that are like similar to that, and how do they link to it, and how can we work together as a cohesive unit of people and delivery to make sure that our optimizations are working with yours and they're not against each other? You don't want to create a big laborious test process to improve things that clashes massively with where the business practices work, right? It's got to be done in unison. So being transparent and sharing those changes with the business, I think, is a way of doing that.
Yeah, I agree with that. Just to add on. So one of the hybrid models that we use here, as Stefano said, we did one recently. So we spend as much, if not more, time with developers, architects, and DevOps engineers in this maturity process for exactly that point. So we don't see it as a testing organization on its own and a silo thing. We see it as a quality organization throughout the software development lifecycle and the stakeholders thereof. So when we do these type of health checks or maturity assessments, we involve all the stakeholders in the engineering department and understand how they tackle quality. Because as you often say, Leon, quality is a mindset and it's everyone's responsibility. And when we assess with that mindset as well, to say, developers, what are you doing? Architects, development leads, and then even to the CIO level around quality and testing. So we consult all those stakeholders to make sure that when we put recommendations out there, that we've considered everyone in the software development lifecycle and not only testing. Our main aim is obviously maturing the test organization, but even in saying test organization, it's that mindset of everyone in the software development lifecycle is part of that test organization, not only testers.
Really agree. I think that the other important thing to make here is any sort of an assessment is only the starting point. It tells you where you are today and what you need to improve on. But the hard work starts after that. You actually need to start implementing those. And I think that's often where a lot of what you just said, yeah, and that becomes even more pertinent, because now you have something where you need to start getting other people in the business, potentially outside of testing, involved, and you kind of need to get them to go on this journey with you. But that measurement that you do up front, it's equally important to try and implement what the recommendations are, get on that roadmap in terms of what needs to be improved. But then at some point, you need to remeasure again to see, have you actually made improvement? So what is that? I guess it'll depend on the size of the organization and how many people are within the testing space, et cetera. But generally, how often should you, I guess, re-undertake that assessment, redo that assessment to see whether what you have tried to implement has actually, I guess, worked, or maybe see, well, what's next? We've achieved everything, we've implemented everything that we set out. Now, what is the next set of activities?
Yeah, that's a good one, isn't it? Because I think when you see those levels kind of laid out, but we're going to get to level 5. Like, oh, we're finished. We're done. We've got level 5. That's it. We can stop now. Whereas in reality, it's a continuous process. Part of level 5 is being optimized. So continuously reviewing the way that you do things, continuously trying to improve those things all the time. It's not just something, it's a destination. It's an ongoing journey, like you said. And when do you kind of step back and go, we need to do a review? I think if you follow a formal framework, they'll actually tell you when that accreditation will lapse. And I think the last potentially like up to 3 years or maybe less than that. And that's when they would come in and do another assessment. If you're going down an informal route, I think it's subjective and again, probably down to the client. So if you're working with us, okay, you reviewed us after year one, we've implemented stuff, we worked for another year, can you come back in year two and have a look for it with us? And that would depend on the organization, the client size and things like that. So I think for a formal assessment, it's quite structured as when those reviews happen. Informally, it'd be down to the client and the environment that we're working with.
Just to add to that, yeah, so it also depends on the size of the organization and maybe the desired outputs. So for example, one of the things which you find in the TMMI model is the testing department should be properly structured, and even things like reporting, like who does the test manager report to, and also whether the job descriptions are there for the testers to know what they are doing. So those things are pertinent. So as part of maybe the KPIs before the year ends, you would want to review to assess whether they have been put in place. So like I said earlier, it's not only about the tools and technology, but people also. So if that aspect has to be reviewed or looked at, maybe I would say an assessment can be done twice a year, depending on the size of the organization, or it can be narrowed down. Maybe the follow-up one is just to go specifically on the action items to assess what has been actioned and what has not been. But ideally, once a year, but in other cases, twice, depending on action items.
Now that this line of thought has made me think now, I've completed assessments. There was one specific assessment quite a few years ago that I did at a client, and it was a laborious one. It was also TPI Next. And a lengthy report was written, many interviews, and that was the only engagement with the client. We walked away. And a year later, I spoke to somebody in the team and they said, none of that was ever implemented. It was just a tick box, a formal document and a nice to have. And okay, and then they walked away. So my question to you guys is from what you've seen, you know, who actually at the client side, if it's not, for example, us as a consulting company, sometimes the client asks for us to now actually do the implementation. Then it's not easy, but then it's an actual dedicated task, right? But sometimes clients have the document, and from your experience, who's the best person to actually implement that? Some companies have the luxury of a centralized TCOE or a head of testing or a test manager, but sometimes people work purely in isolation in teams or pods, you know, and agile teams. Who do you think would be the best in that kind of scenario where teams sort of run separate silos? Who actually should take the responsibility of driving that out within an organization?
Yeah, so that's a really good point to have. Is if you haven't got a centralized like quality department that sits alongside or as part of QA, or you've got a head of QA or a head of tests or anything like that, that obviously would sit with that person. If you don't have that, in my head, it's the same thing. How do you as a tester understand where do you want to focus on? So are you passionate about it? Then you're probably the person that should be doing it. I want to improve my accessibility testing skills. So that's something I'm going to go and do myself. For the maturity, who owns it? Who does maybe informal audits or audits? It's someone in the organization who's actually passionate about the company doing it. I think that's the right person. And it's just trying to identify who that person is.
Yeah, Stefan, it also depends on the structure of the organization. But basically, the outcome of any assessment, be it TMMI or TPI, it's very strategic. For example, if there's need for the organization, the testing department to be structured in a certain manner, it's a strategic decision which a QA lead or a QA manager might not make. That's why I said it's a very strategic outcome. So implementation-wise, at executive level, they should oversee it, but the guys who do the actual work, it may be the head of quality assurance, test managers, or in whatever structure the company is laid out.
You just said something, Matt, that I think is important, and it made me realize. So this whole strategic initiative that you spoke about, what I've seen is that where companies have a problem and we do these assessments that Stefan alluded to, it's a very tactical thing. I have a problem because of a symptom that I've seen. Help me mature to make sure that that problem doesn't happen again. So we see a lot of that. I've started a test organization. I'm not sure it's working well for the following three reasons. Come and look at my maturity to make sure that we are doing the right thing. So there, it's a very tactical thing. And because it's a tactical thing stemming from a problem, we see that a roadmap of action items is owned by a very senior stakeholder, often a C-level stakeholder. And they put those KPIs on the people responsible for testing. They put it to them, and then they measure that because they don't want that problem to happen again. The formal things like the TMMIs is very often strategic, right? You do this, you put it in a report, they put the report somewhere and you present, but no one has really faced a big issue that led to this point. So they just want to understand their maturity. And when you just want to understand something, you don't often act upon it as quickly as you would if there was a real problem. So where we've seen, to answer your question there, Leon, but where we've seen people implementing these things very quickly, it's when it was that we had a problem. I think there's a problem with QA. Come and look at our maturity and tell us what we need to do now to make sure that problem doesn't happen again, whether it's people, process, or technology. And that's where we see these things really being implemented. The other one is more strategic vision. That takes longer. And that is why we periodically re-look at these assessments to make sure that we are moving forward. But when it's the more hybrid, the hybrid assessment one, we have a problem. We want to make sure that we track that so that problem doesn't happen again. And that's a constant improvement cycle.
Just to follow up on Stefan's question, is it advisable to have external consultants to do the assessments, or can it be done internally? Because I think if we do it internally, we're going to be biased.
Yeah, good point, Mamatla. Definitely, if you're doing it internally, most likely you'll be marking your own homework. And it's always good to just bring an independent view, you know, just to avoid those cases where you've got context. You're understanding, I'm saying understanding in quotes, you're understanding the current situation, you understand that there are no resources, you understand the company is still small. You then tend to compromise and be soft on how you should ideally objectively rate or assess yourself. So engaging in external consultants is usually the best way to go. They don't have bias in terms of the current environment or the financial situation of the company. So if there's need for somebody to do this role, that person should do it. I remember when I was doing one assessment using the TMMI, the head of QA was reporting to, in fact, the QA lead was reporting to the dev manager, and there were so many conflicts even when I was just interviewing them, simply because at that point that company could not afford to hire a QA manager. So the QA lead was reporting to the dev, and there were always fights and conflicts. So if you are internal and you're doing such an assessment, you understand that the company doesn't have money. But if you're objectively looking at TMMI, you'll be saying, okay, what does it say for ABCD? And you have your own objective assessment. So independence is possibly the best way to go, in my perspective.
Yeah, and I'll just finish that off with, independent assessment is always going to be a more preferable because you're not having that bias. But I would always try and partner that person up. So if we came into a client, it would be partnering up with someone within their QA function or test organization to partner with. So because that will help that independent assessment, like what's the culture like, who are the people I need to speak to, get an insight into the company that you won't get as an outsider looking in and partner that up. So we bring the impartiality, you bring the business culture and knowledge and know-how of how your systems of work and practice work as well. So I think that's a really useful way of doing it.
Great conversation. I think if I was to summarize the conversation, it sounds like there isn't necessarily a one-fits-all model. So it's very dependent on I guess, the size of the company, whether you're at the start of the journey, whether you've already undertaken the journey, maybe you're a much bigger organization and you're fairly mature already. And depending on where you are, you might choose a different model. I think what I've heard is the hard work starts after the assessment is actually done. And I was going to add that I think if you get the assessment done and just go about your day job normally, none of that's going to improve. None of it's, you're not going to mature. You have to have someone who's tasked and made accountable to actually ensure that those recommendations are implemented. Otherwise, you're going to see yourself in the exact same spot 6 months, 12 months down the line. Unless you have someone doing that hard work, working with the test team, working with the development team, working with whoever is required to improve that process, I think it's often just a tick box activity, and that's all it's going to be. So I think it was a really great conversation in terms of the different models and the pros and the cons in terms of using a more structured approach like the TMMIs and TPI. But also there's a place for, I guess, custom models. And maybe the custom models are more appropriate for the smaller companies. Maybe the TMMI TPIs is maybe more prone towards the bigger companies. But like I said, it's not necessarily always the case. In the fact, there might be a small organization really benefiting from understanding what that TMMI roadmap looks like and what they need to work towards. So thank you very much for participating. A really good conversation. I was trying to keep this podcast to half an hour, but we've, I think, run almost double that time. But as long as it's a good conversation, then we're always willing to extend. If you listen to this podcast and you have any specific themes or topics you'd like us to cover, please either reach us on LinkedIn or put a comment on wherever you listen to the podcast. We're always open to exploring different topics and themes. And then, yeah, we very much thank you for listening. So until next time, thank you very much.
This has been an episode of Testing Experts with Opinions, an inspired testing podcast. Find us on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok, where we're driving conversations.